Welcome to the Living Life on Purpose podcast with your host, Michael Mukunda Chandra Cohan, the founder of YourWellnessYogi.com and the Living Life on Purpose community. The Living Life on Purpose podcast is a show dedicated to inspiring people to achieve their goals and live their dreams to the highest potential. Life is short. Learn to live it on purpose. Inside all of us is a powerful spark of the divine, and yet as life's challenges grind and wear us down, many of us forget that inner spark. However, that spark never leaves us, and if we stray too far from it, we will be unhappy in our life. At Your Wellness Yogi and the Living Life on Purpose community, we are dedicated to helping you discover that inner spark in life. We offer a variety of life coaching packages that meet your needs and budget. We have group coaching, monthly mindfulness mastermind calls, and one-to-one coaching. Get started today and take advantage of our two free personal one-to-one coaching conversations by taking the Circle of Life quiz, a free life assessment tool that helps you reveal the big picture of your true dreams and paves the road for real personalized action plan to take control of your life. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/life. Before we get started, I wanted to ask you a favor, to write us an honest review of our podcast. By writing us a review, you will help raise our profile so more people can find us on iTunes. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/podcast and click on subscribe to open up in iTunes and write us a review. You can also write us a review on your device as you listen to the show by opening up the podcast app. Thank you and enjoy this week's episode, and I appreciate you listening. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Living Life on Purpose podcast. I am really grateful that you guys continue to listen, and I am so thankful. Today's full-length episode is with our guest, Mark Groves. Mark is a human connection specialist and a speaker whose purpose is to help individuals and companies step into their most authentic, effective, loving selves by way of his bold, no BS relationship guidance. We have a lot of discussions today on the relationships of individuals, both masculine and feminine energy, relationship cultures, relationship challenges, and we dive deep into spirituality and how to be a spiritual couple, both masculine and feminine. This is a great podcast. I hope you guys listen, and I really hope you enjoy it. And now let's get on with this episode. Thank you again. Mark, thank you for being on the show. I really do appreciate you and your time. And I want to ask you, as we get into this show, what is your definition of living life on purpose?
Man, thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited to jump into this conversation. Me living my life on purpose, it's probably twofold. I'd say the first part is living true to my heart, true to my sort of highest intention, to the work I want to do and how I want to show up. And I think that second part is how I want to show up in the work I do, is that I live by this principle that I'm always operating at my highest level of knowledge. And what I mean by that is I so often used to learn something and then still do the behavior. And I started to look back and be like, wow, I learned this so long ago. Why didn't I change my behavior? So I created a standard in my life that was like, every time I learn something, I grow and change from it. And that's why every sort of painful experience I have, or positive, I look into it and I ask myself, how is this inviting me to grow so I don't repeat the pattern?
Thank you for sharing, Mark. I really do appreciate it. And what I want to get into right away is what we talked about before we started the show about masculine spirituality and the struggles that I find men, including myself, have as spiritual beings and maintaining our masculine energy.
Yeah, you know, we had mentioned this just previously before we started, that it is so true that when we start to connect to spirituality, whatever that means for each person, I think in a lot of ways it feels as though because we're tapping into our more compassion and our more spiritual side, that we tend to start to express and connect with our feminine side. But you know, it's the pendulum starts to swing. We go from hyper-masculinity, which is often closed down, often, you know, sort of assertive and driven and all that stuff, to super open, super vulnerable, you know, all of the other extremes, which, you know, I think as all men can say, doesn't really translate to, it usually translates to attracting very masculine women when we're in that space.
Right. And what happens, I find personally, and from past experience, and I no longer have this because now I'm engaged, was my struggle to attract women in a spiritual context. And I would be surrounded by these women at yoga studios and at ashrams. And I was the spiritual yogi, but all the women around me did not want to be in a relationship with me. They looked at me as a woman. And at the same time, they all complained that their boyfriends were not spiritual and didn't want to do the things with them, like go to yoga, go to meditation, and go on yoga retreats. Or they could never find a guy that was into the things they're into. And I would be sitting there going, hello.
And you're like, yeah, I'm right here.
I'm right in front of you.
I think this points to two really powerful things. One is that men don't, because we're sort of taught like, you know, nice guys finish last. The asshole gets the guy. You know, women are attracted to last assholes. There's a book written for women. So pardon for the language too, is Why Men Love Bitches. Mm-hmm. And the sort of underlying message we send is that people are attracted to people who are unkind, you would, you know, say based on those words. But it's really that people are attracted to people who have high self-worth. Now, the challenge with people who are assholes or the B word, is that they are masquerading as if they have high self-worth, but they have a high level of unavailability. So their behavior creates walls around them, but those walls are misconstrued as boundaries. So if we were to go from like, that would be the hyper-masculinized male, right? And then the hyper-feminized male would be the nice guy. And so the real balance is, you can't be too closed and you can't be too open, because both demonstrate a hurt person. They both demonstrate a reaction to pain. And we don't know. And this is sort of true to Esther Perel's work too, where she talks about how like love and desire are always at odds. You know, I agree with that, but I think it's actually a little bit further. And I'm sure she would explain it much further if I ever had a chance to sit down and talk to her. But I think it's really that love and being open are at odds with losing our freedom. And I don't think as a culture we've really learned how to love someone and hold on to who we are. We often love someone and lose who we are. So we're either hyper-protected, hyper-masculine, and not available, or we're way too open because we're trying to please. And the second side of that, of what you were saying about being at these yoga retreats and all those types of things, is that women, what they, and I'm saying this from a research-based thing, so I'm not generalizing, this is true, this is shown in research, that what they say they want, you know, when they're speed dating, for example, in some of the studies, versus what they are attracted to and choose in the speed dating, are often very different. Because there's a biological choosing that's happening versus what their mind would choose. And that's why when you see like a woman who's very spiritual complaining that their partner is not spiritual and they're not doing these things, why are they picking someone who's not, you know, fully aligned in some sense? And that's a good question, right? Like, why aren't they? And I think till we sort of tap into the spiritual purpose of relationship, that it invites our healing, you know, that it invites us to sort of rise above and above and above. Till we do that, I think we just see relationships as haphazard, you know, like I just ended up with this person, but I think, and they have this set of quirks and this thing that annoys me and the, you know, whatever it is, but whatever it is that frustrates you most about your partner is a beautiful invitation to some form of healing. So that was probably a really long answer to that question.
I think it's a very good answer. And I find that a lot of my students struggle with having the desire to go down a spiritual path, whether it is yoga or personal growth. Mm-hmm. And their partner has no desire to follow them or be a part of that person's journey because they're afraid that their existing life is going to change and they don't want to have any sort of hardship during this change and this journey of introspective personal growth. And a lot of partners then end up splitting because they go in opposite directions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when we enter the spiritual or personal growth world, which I guess I think are often synonymous, we are afraid to invite our partners into it because we're afraid they're not going to want to join us. And the other side of it is that we have to make sure that we're giving them security. You know, like, I want to go on this path. This is what I'm learning. I'm super excited to learn about it. Do you want to learn with me? I mean, I have to tell you, you know, it's growth has to be a baseline agreement of a powerful relationship that we're going to grow and we're going to look at our stuff and we're going to be willing to receive feedback and see what we're not so good at. But I continuously see, you know, people sort of waking up to what they want to, who they want to be and what they want to learn, you know, after they've been with someone for 10 years. And it's usually the woman who sort of is in that role. And then the man's like, but I thought things were good, you know, and why do we have to change anything? And I think that's the fear is coming from, like, is there something wrong with me? Like, why do you have to disrupt stuff? Am I going to have to all of a sudden get into talking about my feelings and opening up and wanting to step into this growth world? And I think it's even harder for men who are the initiator in the relationship because it's not socially, you know, like, men are not socialized to be the more powerful emotional communicator. And when you find yourself in that role, I'm not sure that it's necessarily celebrated and the people around you aren't going to be like, you know, it's not a conversation you often hear where a male is saying, my partner just won't talk. She doesn't want to talk and she doesn't want to, you know, step into growth conversations. Although it's one that often happens, it's just not one that's, we're not socially attuned to.
Yeah, I think men struggle with having a spiritual journey. And most of the information they're given, especially in the podcast world, is all about how to perform, how to succeed, and mm-hmm. how to become the leader, the alpha male. And we are programmed that men are supposed to be successful and cut off any other emotion we have in life. And when we do tap into that, we're considered weak or effeminate. And so men, I find, struggle with connecting to people when they want to be spiritual, and they end up complaining about how they feel alone and they feel left out and they're no longer able to be a part of a group and or in a relationship. And they usually just either shut down that aspect of spirituality or they go so far into it that no woman wants to be in a relationship with them because all they do is over talk about their feelings.
Yeah, and I think that's where we start to learn the difference between vulnerability and oversharing. And like when you're starting to use emotion as your only way of connecting. I think too, you know, for me when I was, entering the personal growth path and spiritual sort of getting to know my purpose and who I was and whatever that, you know, means in the end of the day, is that I automatically sort of felt pre-rejected by my male friends that I grew up with. Like, I'm not sure that I even gave them a chance to reject me so much as I was living in the fear that they were going to reject who I was becoming. And because I did, you know, it's easier now for me to look back because it's been 12 years since I began that journey. But I can look back now and I can see that I didn't necessarily even invite them sort of peacefully into joining me into those conversations just by asking different questions, right? Because you have to think, for a male who's been operating, you know, I grew up playing sports. I grew up, you know, it's at going to the bar and, you know, our guys talking about, you know, picking up chicks and those types of things. When I started to really want to connect on a deep level, wanting to have really deep conversations, not that they hadn't happened before, but all of a sudden I was like really intrigued to a guy who you haven't been having those conversations with, to all of a sudden start, they're like, what is happening, man? You know, like, what's going on with you? And I think now when I look back, I would definitely approach that differently. I would have invited them into that conversation in a way that didn't totally rock their psyche or rock their identity, and where I didn't decide for them that they were rejecting me without giving them a chance.
I think I went through the same experience, and a lot of the feedback I got from my friends, my male friends, was, you're no fun anymore. You don't hang out. All you want to do is go to yoga, and you've become a weak man. And instead of me trying to, because I lived in New York City, by the way, and I worked Wall Street adjacent, and I worked in that hyper-competitive environment where...
Very masculine, yeah.
Very masculine, all about who has the nicest toy, who has the nicest apartment, who's going on the nicest vacation. And within a 1 year period, I did a 360 and was like, I just want to go to yoga. I just want to meditate. And I just want to be more in touch with who my purpose in life. And my friends were like, you're lame. And instead of me trying to share my experiences with them, I shut them down. And what I've always wanted to learn is there any way or any suggestions you have for men that can help them on this journey of spiritual awakening without losing their masculine energy? Hey guys, I'm really excited to make this announcement. Starting in April 2019, my partner and I will be hosting a monthly 200-hour residential yoga teacher training at Ananda Ashram. This yoga retreat and spiritual educational center is just 1 hour from New York City, founded in 1964 by Sri Brahmananda. Located in the foothills of the Catskill Mountains, the ashram provides a serene natural environment with woods and meadows surrounding a lake. Once a month, students will immerse themselves into life and culture of ashram living and develop a deep understanding of yoga. This training teaches you to incorporate asana, chanting, music, meditation, mindfulness, Ayurveda, and scriptural study into a challenging practice and prepare students to live a fulfilled and empowering life. Our goal is to attract students across multiple backgrounds to produce emboldened, informed, and confident yoga teachers. For more information, please visit our website at mayatriyogaschool.com. Thank you. And now let's get back to the show.
Well, I think the first part is, I mean, the first part of all growth is recognizing that, you know, you're going to lose people. And that's actually a sign that you're growing. You know, that's actually a good sign that you're shifting, because all relationships are just agreements on how we're going to behave. You know, at the end of the day, that's what a relationship is we relate together and we're going to have shared values and shared morals and shared activities and shared beliefs, all of those things, because the moment I shift, I'm going to challenge you to shift. And so that's why when you see your friends, your partner get reactive, it's out of fear that you're changing the agreements, that you're shifting, which is a good thing if you're growing in, you know, in the right direction. I think for us as men, in order to engage in that conversation too, is, I mean, part of the growth is being able to recognize that whether you stay friends with them or not, and I don't want to separate that from the pain of losing friends, because that's a real thing, is whether you stay friends with them or not is sort of part of the growth, is being able to accept that you may not. Because that's saying how I feel about me is more important than how you feel about me. So when I'm acting in a way that is not in accordance with who I truly am, which is usually what we're doing till we're not, right? Because part of the spiritual journey is unbecoming all the things we became in order to fit in order to be part of a family, in order to be part of a spirit, a religion, a community, a culture. And so when you actually start to shift that and take those layers off, you're going to lose people who are operating by the same agreements, or you're going to invite them to join you just through the inspiration of your choice. You know, so when you actually start to self-express fully, the losing people because you're self-expressing is actually saying, my heart and my feelings and my words are more important than keeping you. And that's, I think, you know, just in talking about it, why we often shift to our feminine, because we become very open, we become very unguarded, but we still need to have boundaries around what behaviors are okay around us. And often our former behaviors may have toxicity, they may have codependency, they may have, you know, so many different behavior patterns that when undoing can be really challenging. And, you know, I think about, you know, the conversations I used to have with friends about cars and about, and don't get me wrong, I like nice cars. I like a nice house. Those things can still be true. It's just, are they what drives you? Are they what matters? And when I look at a male who is hyper resource and material focused, I know that that's coming from a trained place, that they were taught to do that. And I know that it's usually coming from an insecure place. If I have these things, then people will choose me. If I don't, then they won't. And so I could sort of connect to the compassionate side of that, which I think comes from being able to connect to why we used to do it, if that makes sense.
It does. I feel that as a male, we are programmed to be the provider and the protector. And because living in the West can be a very highly competitive environment where we don't have a lot of safety nets, we shut off all other parts of our self, our being, and all other aspects of our life to provide for our family and provide for our home. And we struggle with connecting to who we really are.
Yeah, and I think as men, we, you know, exactly what you're saying is like, we are taught to be a provider. And if our partner is a provider, we're speaking very heteronormatively, but this is true in same-sex relationships too, is that one person usually takes the masculine role, the provider, the leader, the whatever. And so as women are really stepping into that role more now, they're attracting more feminized men. But there is this idea, if you're male and stepping into this spiritual space and connecting to your emotions, you'll often get flooded with them because you've opened something you've not tapped into in so long. So there's a lot of grief there. There's a lot of sadness for the little boy in you that you've really left behind and not connected to, who's had a ton of feelings and a ton of hurt and a ton of anger. And we're taught to, you know, as you said, to be successful, to express happiness. And we're also socialized to express aggression. And those, you know, aggression is an unhealthy version of anger. It's not even, you can have very clean anger, and anger is important to have. But when you open this space to a part of you, a very large part of you, it can be overwhelming at first. And I think, you know, for me, I really went to the other end of the pendulum before I started to find balance, before I started to, you know, so I sort of think of it like, as you carry along the part of you that is deeply loving, which is, you know, I sort of equate to like the child in us, we also need someone who is the warrior, someone who protects us, someone who says no, someone who says that's not okay. And the challenge, I think, if we're operating from a sort of evolutionary or biological space, is that we've been socialized to be the provider and we haven't been socialized to take on any other roles. And so women have been, you know, for the last 50 years, you know, Esther Perel talks about this, that women have been taught they can be anything and they can take on any role. But men have been taught that they could be a provider. So we often feel very lost when it comes to stepping into that role of caretaking, even, you know, because we don't see purpose in it. We put our value in our ability to take care of our partner and to make money. But, you know, I've shifted mine to, how am I loving? How am I showing up to the world? How's my value in there? It doesn't mean I don't still react to the evolutionary part of me that's like, am I enough as a man? But I just acknowledge it. And I'm like, okay, That's normal that I feel that, because that's a societal pressure. But how am I actually showing up? You know, I really believe that emotion is the currency of the future, that your ability to emote well, to communicate well, to participate on a very assertive and connected level emotionally will really determine your role in the future or now. You know, now is probably a better time to do that.
I agree. And I think there's a lot of struggle with men in spirituality, especially with the Me Too movement, which is a needed movement to happen.
Yes, absolutely.
But at the same time, I feel that men are also struggling because this is the first time in modern life in the last 20 years where to be successful as a man, you do not need to be a macho man. You can mm-hmm. be your own definition. And there's some part of this world or some industry or some profession where you can be very successful. And so men are trying to understand who we are today, and we're struggling. And we haven't yet defined the role because we don't want to be the misogynist from the 1960s, the classic James Bond character. Mm-hmm. But we also don't want to be women and have feminine energy. And we are trying to find that balance between being the provider, which is what we enjoy doing because it's who we are. That's what we're programmed. But at the same time, a nurturer, to have a balance between both the masculine and feminine energy within who we are as individuals.
Yeah. I totally agree. And the challenge, because I absolutely 100% agree that the Me Too movement is so important and essential to rock the power structures. And in the spiritual world, those power structures have been abused.
Yes.
So many spiritual teachers who have taken advantage of students and continue to. And, you know, I think that's where you start to see men who bypass through spirituality, where they play the role and they're so connected and they'll align your chakras with their root chakra, you know, like whatever it is that they spiritual players. But I think on the other side of that is that we really need to speak up as men about things like the Me Too movement and join in the conversation. Because if we don't, it gets curated by women, which is okay because they're, and I don't mean that to sound like their contribution isn't important. It's absolutely important and their anger is important. But if we're not there supporting that change, we're not, because we're so terrified and ashamed, then we don't get to show good men how do you hold space in this conversation and hold on to who we are. Instead, a lot of us are really quiet right now because we're terrified, because we've all probably leered at a woman. We've all probably hollered at one. And some of us have done worse things. And so there's a fear of turning towards that shame. But, you know, that's part of healing masculinity. That's part of, you know, stepping into a different role. And it's really hard to watch because I think of, you know, watch that silence. I've participated in that conversation. It took me a while to show up to it too, because I was terrified of saying the wrong thing, you know? And I think what made me begin to have that conversation and do it publicly is because I thought if I was a 15-year-old boy and I was watching the news, I would get the message that men are bad, men are rapists, men are power hungry, men. And I was like, that's not what I want a 15-year-old to learn or a 13-year-old. I want them to learn how to love well. And there's such a confusing message still sent by women, though. If you go online and you start to read memes, I saw one the other day that said, where's a man who'll just take me and throw me against a wall and make love to me? And I was like, what a confusing message if you're 13. Like, at least as an adult, I can read that and be like, well, there's space for consent in there and a conversation. And how do you take someone in a safe spot? You know, there's so many parts of that statement that need to be sort of, for sake of a better term, undressed, you know, in so to speak.
Well, I think that's the big struggle for masculine spiritual energy. And whereas men don't know how to interact with women without losing that sense of masculine and being an individual. But at the same time, spiritual men are confused because the women that are in their lives aren't attracted to them. And they don't know how to track the spiritual counterpart and are afraid to become spiritual because then they're afraid that women won't like them.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a fear of whether they're going to get a girl or not, right? You know, which is, of course, at the end of the day, we want partnership. And again, that's part of the growth is how can I show up to this if I'm not trying to get her? How do I show up to life if I'm not trying to be chosen by her? You know, if you become the type of man that gets chosen, that's different, but not in a archaic masculine style, but in a space of, you know, because under there is the belief that's still a wounded boy, that I'm not worthy of being chosen. It's just being expressed differently than the overtly unavailable male.
Mm-hmm.
And so the balance is really starting to ask yourself, because the underlying belief is I'm not worthy. So if you want to shift a belief, you have to short circuit it by giving it evidence that the belief is not true. So I would guide my behavior with asking myself the question, like, if I was enough, what would I do? If I was worthy of being chosen, how would I act in this moment? And that's likely going to mean having a boundary. That's likely going to mean not over-communicating. That's likely going to mean that you're going to have to do shit that's uncomfortable that you're used to doing that earned love and connection, but not the type that you wanted. And so that's really stepping into that space where, and I think that's so much of our healing as men and women is moving from the space of, if you choose me, I'm worthy of being chosen. No, if I choose me, I'm worthy of being chosen because I'm already the evidence. And that's that shifting of self-worth coming from outside of us to self-worth coming from inside of us, from materials and all those things to self-expression and authenticity.
I wanted to take a quick break and remind you that it is never too late to make a choice and decide to make lasting changes in your life and create the life you want and learn to live life on purpose. At Your Wellness Yogi and the Living Life on Purpose community, we are dedicated to helping you discover that spark in life. We offer a variety of life coaching packages that meet your needs and budget. We have group coaching, monthly mindfulness mastermind calls, and one-to-one coaching. Get started today and take advantage of our two free personal one-to-one coaching conversations by taking the Circle Life Quiz, our free life assessment tool that helps you reveal the big picture of your true dreams and paves the road for a real personalized action plan to take control of your life. Visit yourwellnessyogi.com/life. Let's move into another topic where I want to talk about how you can develop a spiritual relationship with your partner, whether it is same sex, opposite sex, or gender reversal roles. And I want to explore how to be a spiritual couple and to also live in the material world, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, of course.
So how can you be a spiritual couple today?
Well, I think it would be important that you both decide or, you know, define what spiritual means for you as a couple. And what that, like, what is it? Because all words are just agreed upon definitions. So, you know, it's kind of like when someone says, I want to get married. Well, everyone has, especially depending on your history and your culture and your past and what you've observed, everyone has a different definition of the word marriage. And so it's very important that when we think about like a spiritual couple or a relationship, how do you define relationship? What does it look like? What are the agreements that we're going to operate on? And I think the sort of underlying tenet of a spiritual relationship, which I think all relationships are spiritual, is just are they subconsciously spiritual in that I'm going to keep repeating this devastating pattern by choosing horrible partners or acting up and not behaving myself in, you know, and handling conflict well? Am I going to keep doing that till I learn that it's not healthy, till I change my behavior? So I think they have a spiritual purpose in that sense. But I think when you start to consciously decide that you're going to steer your ship towards you know, I guess self-actualization or becoming your best self or your highest self or accessing God or whatever it is you have to decide what are the agreements that we're going to operate from. What does that mean? And, you know, we talked at the very beginning about having the shared intention of growth, you know, and I think what's so important for relationships is to have that like shared intention of growth and consistent communication. Because if, you know, we're not talking about where we're steering this ship, we're going to end up in different directions very quickly. So communication is just really important. What are you struggling with? What do you need? What, you know, how do you create safety and security as you discover who you are? And, you know, I think that's sort of the underlying beginning of it all, I suppose.
What I find most couples, when they start coming to yoga or they start reaching out to me for life coaching, mm-hmm. they've moved past the survival mode of the relationship, which means they're typically been in a relationship for 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. They're no longer struggling with their bills. Their house is paid for, or their mortgage is halfway through. Their mm-hmm. cars are paid for. They're both making a decent living, and they're no longer in survival mode. And yet they've stopped communicating and they've stopped sharing. And one couple or one member of the relationship decides to go on a spiritual journey and gets into yoga or gets into meditation or starts listening to podcasts like mine and yours or starts reading personal growth books, and the other one's still in survival mode. And the couple or the individual within the relationship who starts this journey doesn't communicate with their partner what they have begun, and it strains the relationship. Mm-hmm. And they don't set up systems where they can begin to talk and communicate beyond the kids got to get to soccer practice, got to mm-hmm. get to work. Their kids are past a certain age. What do you think is the best solution a couple can have so they don't fall into that trap at an early age? And then what could they do when they find themselves in that part of their life where they begin to drift apart?
Well, the first part is setting up really good rituals to not get there. But, you know, I think it's inevitable that all couples will get to a place where they feel, you know, separated or like they're drifting. And of course, that's when you do the work to bring yourselves back together. So I think one of the first rituals that I've really loved, there's sort of two of them. One is that, you know, you set a habit of being able to just, you know, 2 to 3 times a week. My partner and I do this where it's just something we do when we're going for a walk or something like that. And I mean, taking the time to go for walks together and do things together is part of it. But being able to say, like, what are 2 things you're grateful for and 1 thing you appreciate? And so the 2 gratitudes are about life and how did you create them? So it might be like, I'm grateful for the sunset. You obviously didn't create the sunset, but you took the time to notice it. So 2 things you're grateful for about life, 1 thing about you appreciate about your partner and why. And what that does is it creates sort of a baseline culture of gratitude within the relationship that I still see you. I still don't skip the opportunities to express to you how grateful I am and how much I appreciate this thing that you do that contributes to my life. And that continues to give a role to our partner. I think often when we get very self-sufficient and we live in this sort of very independent phase is that we don't tend to want to need other people or to depend on them. But that is a very important part of a relationship, is to be able to need someone and depend on them, but not give away our own independence in doing so. The other ritual that I love that my friend's parents have always done, and they started doing it and then I love it, and so we started doing it, is every 6 months they go separate ways before dinner. They have what they call a semi-annual general meeting. I love the name of it. Kind of like a company. And they would go apart and they would write out what are their goals individually. And then when they get to dinner, they meet at dinner at a restaurant, and then they exchange the paper and you read your partner's goals aloud for the first time and the other partner reads yours. And then what her parents did and what they do and now we do is you write out, how do you achieve these individual goals as a couple And then what are the couple goals for the next 6 months? And I just love that. I think it's such a great way to stay aligned and to have conscious conversations about what are we doing here.
Thank you. That was exactly what I was looking for. What other suggestions can you have for a couple that is going through a separation crisis and they don't know how to reconnect and they're not able to have that intentional meeting, Where can they start?
Well, if you're not going and seeking outside intervention to help navigate that conversation and sort of make it make sense, someone to translate that is really helpful. Because often we're so in our hurt that we can't even hear our partner. And when we sort of get to that space of crisis of separation, or, you know, as you mentioned, a couple where one person's going on this growth journey and the other one isn't, when we start to discover more about ourselves and see more parts of ourselves, I think we often get afraid that our partner is going to reject this new version of us. And so instead of inviting them on the journey, we just lock them out and then we're upset that they're not there with us. But we've sort of designed it ourselves. And so I think part of it is being able to rejoin and say, like, hey, I was really afraid that you weren't going to join me with this. And in a way, you take responsibility for shutting them out, right? And being able to just say, like, I'm really learning these things and I really love them. And I would love you to be part of this conversation. You know, I think we often forget that when we criticize people, we have a desired behavior that's behind that. You know, it's as simply as, like, you never take out the trash. It's like, it would be really helpful if you took out the garbage. But most people don't communicate it in the second way. They communicate it in the first way. And when we're starting to separate or really experiencing a crisis, starting a conversation with simply, I feel so much space between us, and that makes me sad. And I'd really like to learn how to reconnect with you and hear you and hear what you're struggling with. And just starting that conversation is just where you begin.
Thank you. I think that was perfect. We're running out of time. We have about 5 more minutes. Is there anything else that you feel that you should talk about on today's show that I can edit out this conversation right here?
I love how you can do that.
Yes, it's kind of nice. This would be edited right here. We have about 10 more minutes, and if we had enough time, I would wanted to get into the feminine side of spirituality and why women struggle with finding men, spiritual women struggle with finding spiritual men. I wanted to go on the other side of that spectrum, but we only have 10 minutes, so we can get right into that if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, that is a... it's an important conversation because, you know, as men who are in that world, it feels very like, but there's lots of men in that world, you know, because I don't know about you, but, you know, for me, almost all my friends are in those conversations and wanting to talk about those things. And they're saying, where are women who, you know, because I know this group of men that's in Vancouver that are really great, really powerful, really good communicators. And they often find, like, I've heard them talk about how they haven't found a woman who can meet them.
Mm-hmm. I was very lucky to find my life partner, and she's amazing.
And same. Yeah, I'm so blessed.
It took me 3 years to find her.
But isn't that a fascinating thought of, like, you'll hear a lot of women, I don't know that it's spiritual women, but a lot of women say there's, whenever I hear women say there's no good men out there, I know that that's just a belief that they hold to protect themselves from being hurt, you know. And I think when there's this fear that women can't find spiritual men, there are a lot. And I always remind people that I'm working with or clients who say something like that, where I'm like, you only need one. Like, you don't need evidence of 1,000. Because maybe the 1,000 would mean you get to pick from tons and then you'd pick the right one or whatever story they've told themselves. I'm like, you only need one. And if you're so afraid that there are none, you will never see that one because your whole work is trying to find evidence that there are none.
Yeah. And so you justify or you rationalize that there are no good spiritual men out there, but yet you're in your yoga class and you're sitting next to a guy who's heterosexual, or he could be homosexual, and it could be two homosexual men, and there's no good spiritual men in class. But it's typically usually the opposite sex. And you justify like, oh, there's no good men. He's just my friend. He's just the nice guy. And I'm not into the nice guy. I want the guy that's going to throw me against the wall, but also go to my yoga class. And you never give the guy sitting next to you that's able to heal his heart chakra the chance.
Yeah, I think that's that balance where biology and what's good for you start to change, where like you are biologically going to be attracted to men who have really high testosterone, men who have the sharper jawbone, men who have a lot of material, men who are giant and muscular, not always, but you know, for the most part, tend to be attracted to high status males. And you know, that is true. If you look at evolutionary psychology, that is absolutely true. And I think when you get to this space where you're looking and you're not seeing good men around you, where you're actually not attracted to, or you're not saying yes to men who could treat you well, and you're actually bypassing them and looking for riskier, more uncertain, more unsafe men, then there's actually likely a wound that's actually waiting to be healed through your selection process. You know, I think we often equate uncertainty with love. We often equate a lack of safety with love. If you grew up around chaos, if you grew up around high levels of conflict, you'll often, your nervous system will miscode those things as connection. And part of growth is learning how to choose what's good for you versus choosing what's, you know, what's a 12 out of 10 attraction. You know, I think when you're making those decisions with your genitals, it's a very different decision than the one that you make with your heart and brain. And I think in a lot of ways, that's the healing, is when do I start to choose things that are good for me rather than things that are fleeting?
Yeah, I agree with you also. And I do think that there needs to be an acceptance of women in leadership roles in society that can be feminine and not have to take on male personalities. And men can be in a relationship with a woman who is successful. Maybe she makes more money, and he can still maintain his masculine energy, that we do not have to trade our identities in order to fit into what society expects us to be.
Yeah, and I think the less, you know, the less we seek, because of course the part that about like women in leadership roles that, you know, sort of have to adopt masculine qualities to get to those places, it'd be totally false to say, well, that's not true all the time. That's true most of the time. You know, so there are realities that we'll never really fully understand as males, you know, and because we just have an inherent privilege for being male. And I'm a straight white male from Canada. Like, I'm the epitome of privilege. And being able to recognize that, I'll never be able to understand it, but it's so important that I do the work in order to elevate the voices of others who need to have that conversation. And I think as a male, the more we can step into the role of sort of emotional fluency and not care whether someone accepts it or not, the more you take on a masculine leadership role, right? Like the most powerful people are the people who gives, you know, no F's about what other people think about them. But do it in a kind, compassionate way rather than, you know, where we see in some political leadership, which is very different.
Very different. Mark, we're running out of time. I do apologize. Where can everybody find you if they want to get more information on what you do?
You can go to my website at markgroves.tv, like television. I post 2 times a day on Create the Love on Instagram or on Facebook. You can find me under Mark Groves. Twitter, you know, whatever is your jam, I'm on that jam.
And your new podcast show, when will that be launched?
That will be launching on Monday, which is October 29th, I think.
So you will be, by the time this gets live, you will probably be on your 12th episode if you do once a week.
Perfect. So everyone, there are 12 episodes-ish available on my podcast. I love how the future will be meeting us soon.
Mark, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Living Life on Purpose podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe to our show in iTunes and write us a review. By writing us a review, you will help raise our profile so more people can find us on iTunes. Links to our sponsors and other tools can be found in our show notes, along with other useful information. For more information on our yoga and coaching classes, please visit our website at yourwellnessyogi.com and please sign up for our newsletter. Life is short. Learn to live it on purpose.